Carmen Lynch, Liz Mealy, and Sean Eli. Welcome to Coffee in the Clouds with Comedians. How you guys doing?
Hi.
Hi.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Very cool. So listen, I was looking forward to this all week. So thank you so much for everybody getting together. Carmen, it looks like you're getting ready to make a getaway. So just stay tuned for, you know, for a minute with us. But we would love to talk to you guys about comedy and what you do for a living. So we're going to go around the world here. Carmen, we're going to start with you. Who are you and what do you do?
I don't know who I am right now because I haven't done comedy in a while, but I've been in New York for almost, 18, 19 years and started comedy a year or two after that. So almost 20 years, I guess. My mother's from Spain. So I also do stand up in Spanish. And what else do you want to know?
That's enough. That's enough for now.
I'm quirky and weird and dry and sarcastic, apparently. I don't know.
Well, my mother's from Brooklyn, so I do stand up obnoxiously.
So we're doing ladies first. So Liz, who are you and what do you do?
I am currently a stay-at-home comedian. Me and Carmen used to be roommates, so we weirdly have a very parallel existence. I also started about 18 years ago. I've lived in New York for 18 years. I feel the same ambiguity that Carmen does, where it's like my identity was so wrapped around being a stand-up, and I've never gone more than, I think, like a week, maybe 2 weeks if I took a vacation, which is also pretty rare. So to go months without physically doing stand-up, and even now, like, I'll do some Zoom shows, but I'm doing a Zoom show once a week. Like, that to me, I mean, I sweep my floor more often than I do stand-up, and I'm not a clean person. So it's a weird time to ask me who I am, because I think we're all recalibrating who we are as people.
Okay. And Sean?
As I said last week, I stand in a box and talk into a stick, but there's no box and no stick. So I'm staying at home writing some jokes and hoping I don't forget my material.
So how did you guys actually get into the business? Was this like destiny? Was it going to happen no matter what? Like, it was in the cards, or did you fall backwards into it? Liz, let's start with you. How did you get in? How did you get in the business?
I think I have a unique story. I started when I was 16. So I discovered just stand-up in general when I was like 13, 14 years old. And it just kind of was this like clicking aha moment where I was like, oh, I can get all the attention. Like, it just, I'm one of five kids. I don't know. I always wanted to be funny. And the only real example of that I had in the 90s was Sandra Bullock. But I kind of just intrinsically knew that's not what I wanted. And when I discovered stand-up, I was like, I don't know, it just fit. I wanted to be able to express my opinions, but I was scared. I wanted to write, but I'm dyslexic, so I didn't want anybody to read my writing. And then stand-up, and I wanted to be funny, and then stand-up came along, and it felt like the best of all the options. And I started writing when I was 14 years old and showing my stand-up to friends. And then met a young comic when I was 15 that kind of gave me some guidance. And then I started doing stand-up when I was 16, and I really never looked back. I first started just doing it on the weekends. I grew up in New Jersey. And then when I got into college, I was able to convince my parents to let me go Thursday through Sunday, because like I was kind of solidified as somebody that was going to go get a higher education. And they thought it was a phase. I was like, they didn't know about my drug phase at the time. So they should have been really proud of my comedy phase. But then when I went to college, I started doing it every single night of the week. So we're talking about an 18-year-old girl going to class during the day and then every single night doing anywhere from one to three shows. And as soon as I was out of college, I was being paid and driving all around the country trying to do stand-up. So I started really young, and truly this is the longest I've ever gone without doing stand-up my entire adult life.
Who was the young comic who gave you guidance? You mentioned somebody, but you didn't tell us.
I actually don't like mentioning him because we're no longer friends, and I don't support him as a person.
Good, then it wasn't me.
Okay, Sean, we're going clockwise. You're up.
I worked in finance and started writing jokes freelance for The Tonight Show for Jay Leno's opening monologue. And I went on a date with somebody who said, you should try stand-up. And I said, you know, the last time I performed on stage was fifth grade. I was in the fifth grade play. I had three lines, and then I got shot. And everybody after that thought it was really funny to come up to me and say, oh, I thought you were dead. And I'm like, I never want to be on stage again. But she talked me into taking a class, and I started, and seems to work. I mean, not the last 4 months, but it's been a good ride. And I get to hang out with people like Liz and Carmen.
Yeah.
And Carmen, how'd you get in the game?
I was an exotic dancer for years. I always wanted to be an actress. It was my favorite thing growing up in Virginia. I did like theater in high school, and I just moved to New York to become an actor, and I fell right into this backwards. I didn't mean to do it. Somebody took me to a stand-up show. I got very jealous of the comics that they didn't have to, put makeup on and dress up the way actors do. I just wanted to go up there and be myself, and I tried it, and thank God nothing else worked.
You're an astronaut, right?
I was an astronaut for a while.
On before purpose? Exotic dancing, of course.
Weren't you an astronaut on was it Colbert?
On Colbert, yeah, for a sketch.
Right.
Oh, very cool.
So was an astronaut.
So, you know, one of the topics, one of the areas that we like to talk about is the business, right? Showbiz, comics, stand. And one of the questions I always ask is, comedy just seems to be this esoteric thing where, you know, you have the mix of celebrity and then you're self-employed and you know, your career trajectory, et cetera. If the pandemic was not here, it is, right? But if it wasn't, what would be on your short list? What would be saying, man, I want this for the rest of the year. What is it that would make things be great?
Personally or career-wise? No,
business-wise. Well, I guess they're all intertwined, right? But, you know, more to your career, more to your business. What if you could go like this and fix things or change things, what would life look like? What would the world look like if you could do that right now for your business?
I mean, I'd be touring. I was in the middle of probably my biggest, bestest, most financially secure tour, and then it all went away so quickly. But I personally love live performance. I love traveling. I love going to new places. I love just writing and working on new stuff. And like, I just released an hour last week. I recorded it in November, but I released it to the world last week. So my whole thing is, once something is taped, I want to start building the new hour. And when the pandemic hit, I had about 20 new minutes, but my goal was to have 40 new minutes by June. And that is not happening. But I just love touring and live performance, and I miss it.
Carmen?
I mean, I'm the same way. I fell into stand-up thinking that I would write for someone and not actually do it, because it just looked so scary, and I ended up just loving the live performance part of it. So I really do miss that, and I've been all over the world as Liz. We've been to different countries together. And it's just one of the really great perks of being a stand-up. I do stand-up in Spanish, and I was supposed to be in Spain for 2 weeks in mid-May doing shows in Spanish. And I love that. I love watching my audience and my fan base grow. So I would just say I'd just love to do that in theaters and just go all the way, really.
I didn't know you guys toured together. Where do you guys go overseas together?
We went to Cuba together.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like we've done some other stuff, and we've had like London. We were in London together.
We overlapped in London. She did Edinburgh and I did Edinburgh the next year.
Yeah. But you came to visit
me
there. We've
done a lot of similar gigs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because I know Carmen and I have been to Ohio and Texas together.
Yeah.
Big Very ones. Exciting. we even went to a Dave and Buster's. Who was the other comic with us? Wally. Right?
Wally in Ohio, Wally Collins in Ohio, and Joe DeVito in Texas.
And Joe DeVito, yeah.
Actually, it was kind of funny because one of the hotels in Texas had an armadillo. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
Armadillo in the lobby, and Carmen lay down next to it, looking like, you know, shaping with the same sort of shape as the armadillo. And Joe DeVito took a picture of it and posted it as Armadillo and Carmadillo. And Liz has an armadillo joke in her act, in her TV special.
We are, me and Carmen are the same person. I mean,
it all comes together. I mean, I have cat jokes only for Liz.
They're about my cat.
I know, they're about your cat.
They are about your cat, yeah.
She's shitting on my cat on national television and making fun of her roommate, who's a cat lady. And I was like, this feels really directed at me. Like, this
feels
personal.
It feels like your cat's been on Letterman.
She does have better TV credits than me. I've always said that. She's the next grumpy cat.
Tell your cat not to bite Carmen's foot, and then you won't have a problem.
Well, if Carmen wasn't such a B-I-T-C-H, she knows.
You know, can't help it.
We're forever roommates, even though we haven't lived together for years.
Well, when are you going to move back in together?
We're pretty close. I think with the little bit of money that we have, I think we're really close to going
back. Yeah, now we'll be going back.
What are you doing in the car? What's going on here?
I'm in Connecticut with my boyfriend's family, and there's seven of us. So right now, this is the most quiet place in the house.
So you're not actually driving anywhere. You're just hiding in the car.
Oh, yeah, I'm driving. Hold on. No. No. I have the keys. I could go somewhere, but.
Actually works out well. Oh. It's almost like a little studio. So it actually.
It is. Yeah, it's very nice. Out. It's quiet. I can yell. No, you know, there are other people on phone calls in there or, you know, watching TV. It's just, this is the best office space.
I never figured you for a minivan person.
Yeah, I guess it's a minivan. It's so comfortable. I keep the seats on, the hot seats on.
Yeah. We call that
even
the cold
in the summer with the air conditioning on. It feels good.
So here's a question for you guys. Like, we're on Zoom, right? The world is powered by Zoom now, and you know, there's a lot of businesses that are trying to function remotely, etc. But is anybody making it happen? Is anybody in your industry successfully using technology and actually making money or actually making it happen? Because I'm not seeing it, but maybe you know somebody that cracked the code and that has figured out a way to actually get through this via Zoom-esque, you know, type technologies or YouTube or such. Anybody that's winning?
I feel like I'm winning. To be honest, like, I mean, I'm not at the same level I was, you know, 6 months ago, because I'm starting, and it's, to me, this is like a parallel field. I think the best thing, and I think more, and there's tons of people that are, I think people are either leaning on other side projects like a podcast, which is still financially helping them with Patreon and other donations, which they had in place before, or they started now. Like, I started a podcast literally 2 weeks after I had to be sent home from in the middle of my tour that was canceled.
Two non-doctors
done with another comedian that is based in London, Maria Shahada. So for me, you know, I pivoted in the sense that it's comedy adjacent. So I'm not doing stand-up, but I'm still telling stories and expressing myself and being funny, and I'm doing it in podcast form. And then I started this like new material show with, first I did it on my own for my fans, but then the second show was with Carmen and my other friend, Adrian Appalucci, with the idea that naturally after shows, we would run jokes by each other, or I'd be like, hey, I'm having trouble getting this tag to work. Do you have any ideas? We just, because of our friendship and the trust we built over years, we would always throw ideas at us. And I thought, why not do a behind the scenes show via Zoom to kind of bring people into our, it would A, motivate me to write, because I don't feel motivated to write when I'm not performing. And also it would be a unique look at what we do that I don't think people are presenting. And that's been wildly successful, both for comedians feeling energized to perform and create something, but then also people donating money, people enjoying the show, people getting to see this look at comedy that they wouldn't have seen before. And Carmen did the same thing doing Spanish shows and running new material and doing Spain. And the cool thing is this, there's countries I'm never going to be able to go to for whatever reason. It's dangerous. It's out of the way. It's too expensive. I don't have enough fans there to make money. So now I have somebody in like bumblefuck Italy coming to a show at the same time that somebody from Ohio is coming to a show, and they're all in this kind of Zoom room together. There's a lot of really unique opportunities that would have never happened if we didn't do this, that I think, yes, it's not the same as it was before, but I think there's also some really cool accidental opportunities that are happening.
Cool.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Liz. I think as long as you are striving for and adjusting to the pandemic, you're winning, because right now, I mean, the whole world has a podcast. I also started one, the Human Centipod, at the same time that Liz did. And it's just about trying to, you know, recover or adjust to what's happening. And, you know, mine is with my boyfriend, who's a writer, a TV writer. So we do it in the car because, you know, it's funny and it's, you know, nobody, everyone is inside. We can talk about them. So I think you just have to adjust to what's happening. And deal with it, you know, and when life comes back, I'm sure it'll be a new normal, but the comics who really want to keep doing this, we have to find a way to make it work.
Okay.
I mean, I'm doing this with Tom, so it's something. It's not necessarily stand up or clearly it's not written in advance, but it's just, you know, trying to be funny around other funny people, and I find it helpful. And Liz, you may discover that that guy in Italy who's now a fan because he saw you on Zoom, you know, he could have a company or talk to his local theater and get his friends to come see you, and you may end up discovering you're going there. I mean, you've been to countries with you know, smaller populations. I know you were in Asia last year.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree. And I sometimes get fans that are like, can you come to South Africa? And I want to, but the with the currency being so low, it being so far away, and me not having a lot of fans there, you know, I can't right now. But if somehow during the pandemic, more people from South Africa see my comedy, then the likelihood of me being able to go in 6 months to a year is higher, because I'm building a fan base online that the more people in each city, country, where have you, I make more money, therefore it makes more sense for me to go there. So this can be a time of rest and internal growth, and I'm doing my best to do that as well. But I also think there's a lot of really cool opportunities that if, you know, we're mourning the loss of our love, which is stand up, but I think you can discover more stuff about you, find different ways to express yourself, and continue to expand your fan base in this alternative universe. And what's interesting about it is it's not just America going through it. The entire world is going through it. Yeah, it's a little bit disjointed where, you know, China was a month ahead of us, and, you know, Spain was a week behind us for all intents and purposes, but we're all still kind of going through this together.
And you should go to South Africa if you can. There are 3 full-time comedy clubs in South Africa, and a couple of years ago I worked at all of them. And I have to say, great audiences, great country to visit, wonderful, wonderful colleagues there, but I found it the hardest country I've ever worked in as far as the comedy. It was just different. They would get you more than they got me, because like my New York Jewish sense of humor, they just didn't quite follow a lot of jokes. And every night I'd come home from the club and I'd go back to my hotel and I'd take my set list out and I'd cross things off that didn't work. And I'd be like, well, what would they like? And I'd be pulling out jokes that I hadn't told in years and I'd try them. And by the end of a week, I had it figured out. But it was experience.
I think that's the beauty though of traveling. It's like there's a challenge that's kind of fun, like doing military shows. There's certain things that won't work out because, you know, they just don't. And there are a lot of young soldiers out there, or, you know, doing stuff overseas. The sarcasm in Spain for me is like too subtle, you know? But right now, all we have is social media and videos, and there's a bunch we can keep posting, stand up online, you know, go TikTok, make videos, whatever. Like, there's still stuff we can do to, you know, grow our fan base.
You know, my niece is 24 and just got out of grad school, and she's living with her fiance and her parents, my brother and sister-in-law, and they couldn't have a graduation, so they faked a graduation. And she put together a video of my brother making a commencement speech and three people in the audience and my sister-in-law giving her diploma, and they put it up on Facebook, and it was really funny. And I'm like, I'm going to do something. So in a week, I'm going to be visiting. The only place I go, I'm really staying home. The only place I go is to my brother and sister-in-law's house. And we're going to shoot a video. I'm going to shoot a video with my niece and brother and sister-in-law. And something, you know, I've not done that sort of thing before. I've done stand-up, but I've not done really any other kind of video with limited exceptions. So maybe we'll, you know, something else will come of it.
You know, in normal times, right, when we're not in a pandemic, you know, people maybe forget that this is a business. Right. I mean, there's a little bit of a celebrity status to it, and it's funny and it's fun and it's entertaining, et cetera. But, you know, there's money, right? You pay your bills.
Every time we realize it's a business.
So, you know, now that we're in this mode that we're in, you know, corporate America used to hire comics, and there was a whole movement with improv, and, you know, people were taking comedy lessons because it would help them in business, etc. I ask this question all the time. My opinion, people that are in comedy tend to be smart, highly intelligent. Okay, I don't think you can argue with me on this one, but do you know what I mean? Like, does it take a certain set of mental skills, talents, etc. Are there dumb comics? Can you be dumb and still make it? Or is intelligence and IQ or EQ a big part of what you do?
I mean, I think you have to define intelligence. I think the stereotypical school version of intelligence, no, not at all. If you consider creativity, problem solving, resilience, all those kind of other parallel intelligences that people are just starting to value, I think, in the last 5 years, emotional intelligence, I think what's probably more important than typical school intelligence, which I don't think matters at all, is probably childhood trauma and resilience. Like, this is, being funny is the least difficult part of this job. Rejection, disappointment, feeling overlooked,
business skills.
Absolutely. Business skills, technology, even before this, just the fact that you fucking now have to learn TikTok, and then there's Instagram, and there's the thing that's before and after those. Like, you constantly have to be doing the job of 9 people just to pay your bills, not to be famous, not to be rich, just to pay your bills. You know, people are like, I think it's funny all the time that people are like, I wanted to book you for something. Who's your agent? Who's your manager? And I go, I am my booker. I am my agent. I am my manager. I am my web design. I am my editor. I am my writer. Like, that is what you have to do in the beginning, because it isn't a lucrative field. So when I talk about resistance being more important than intelligence, it's about the fact that I have to sit here and learn iMovie, and I have to sit here and understand why this TikTok didn't do well, and I have to sit here and understand the importance of Zoom during a pandemic. Like, so it's, to me, that I do think that's a form of intelligence. I just think it's not your school book, I got a 4.0, I went to Harvard intelligence.
Yeah, you can't learn this any other way than just doing it. For me, one of the biggest obstacles is patience, because I always yell and go to Liz when I can't figure something out on technology, and she like calms me down. But self-discipline is such a big thing. Like, you have to be your own boss. And just because you get something early on doesn't mean it's just going to snowball into success. You have to keep writing new jokes. You have to keep working at it. And that's just a lesson you learn early on, you know, because jokes get stale. It's not like a song where they're like, play that song again. It's like, people want new stuff, and you have to love the craft. You have to, my favorite part is the new joke part. I mean, I love getting laughs and applause breaks or whatever, but the coming up with a new joke and going, oh my God, I can't believe they get this. And I got the time like that. There's nothing like that.
I did not know that Liz was offering tech support, so I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, I pay her hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't know if you want, I mean, she's expensive.
Yeah. That.
Listen, I've already paid Liz hundreds of thousands of dollars to be in my shows. I think I can afford to pay her the same amount for tech support.
I'm down. I'm down for any amount of money right now. So.
So here's a question. Sean has to go last because I've already asked him this once before. So you guys are going to go first. My observation, not being in the industry, but being a fan of the industry, I always see comedians who then become actors, but I very rarely see actors who then become comics, right? Now, again, this is me, like, uneducated, but what is that? Is that an accurate observation, or am I getting it wrong? Carmen, Liz, who goes first?
I honestly went into stand-up because I was already into acting, and I thought it would just be a better way for me to get like a sitcom or get, you know, anything in the acting world. The thing that surprised me is that I fell in love with stand-up. I was literally just doing it to pursue acting. But yeah, I think a lot of times comedy is interesting because it's improvising, it's you're directing yourself, you're writing, you're acting, you're doing everything on stage. And I think a lot of comics are really good actors, you know. Timing, on the other hand, if you're an actor and you have to go into stand-up, timing takes a long time, finding your persona. I think it's harder to go the other way around. And they're out there. I didn't say they were good, but they're out there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Herman. I've seen it. They're there. I think, you know, not to insult my actor friends, but I think it's not more work. It's different work. It's a different muscle. You know, as somebody that's a runner, they say that running can make you a stronger biker. Biking makes you a stronger runner, but running doesn't necessarily make you a stronger biker. And I'm like, well, that's bullshit. It's all your legs. I don't get it. But it's almost the kind of same thing. I think comedy makes you a stronger actor, but I don't think acting can necessarily make you a stronger performer and writer and comedian. So I think a lot of people kind of go the route that Carmen did, which is they go, you know, if I'm a comic, it's more stage time. I get to kind of control my career a little bit more. That'll help me. And what they find out is it's just more work and nobody cares. Like, you know what I mean? And, you know, Carmen's fortunate that she fell in love with it and she's extremely talented and brilliant. But I think a lot of people go into it, and not to say they're not funny, but the amount of work it takes to transfer that funny, it's exhausting when you're already doing whatever you're doing to become an actor. So I think if the passion isn't there, it's too much work for how little you might get from it if you don't love it.
Well, think about it this way. When you're an actor, you go audition, you talk for 10 seconds or a minute, and they say, thank you, next, and you leave. And you do that over and over again, and eventually you get some roles. And as a comic, if you go on stage and you eat it for 5 minutes, and you got to keep coming back and doing more. So picture the actor going on stage in a comedy club. He gets essentially rejected in the first 30 seconds. They don't laugh at his first couple of punchlines. And then he doesn't get to leave, or she. He or she has to stay there another 4.5 minutes of rejection. And that's a lot harder. So, I mean, I don't see Brad Pitt suddenly deciding, hey, I want to be a stand-up comedian. If he did, people would probably go see him for a while and then discover he's not very funny, and then he would give up.
So we're going to magically pretend that the pandemic is over. This podcast actually reaches millions of people. I wish I could take more personal credit for it, but it does. And that's just the fact of life. So if I gave you 60 seconds and this was going to be viewed by, you know, C-level executives, schools, colleges, universities, people that would say, you know what, we're thinking about hiring a comic. Okay. You got 60 seconds, Sean. What are you going to say to our audience in 60 seconds? Pandemic's over. You're back in business. Here we go.
Sales pitchy or not sales pitchy? Because
58 seconds.
Sales pitch is, my company, the Ivy League of Comedy, just does exactly that. So I would talk to you. I would find out what you're looking for, maybe what business you're in, where you are, what your budget is. And I would find you a comic or two or three, and we would have that to do. But it's, you know, it's not a competition between the three of us. I will certainly say, and I'm sure those two would agree, that They're both funnier than I am. The only positive thing I can say about this is the first time I've worked with Carmen where I'm as tall as she is.
But not anymore.
But okay. You know, there's a lot, I would say, if you're putting on a corporate event, absolutely hire a comedian.
Cool. Liz, you're up.
I'm not for everybody. I don't sell people on me. I'm sorry. I'm not for everybody. I don't pretend to be for everybody. I am a punk band from the 90s that still pays their bills, and I'm okay with that. I usually just have my stand-up speak for itself. I have tons of videos online. If you watch it and you like it, I'm more than happy to be there for you, but I never try to sell people on me because I'm really dark. I curse a lot. I don't even know if I was allowed to do it here. Not to say that I can't. I can absolutely be clean. I can absolutely fit between the lines. But if I'm at a place in my career that I just want to be myself, I'm, you know, up until a couple of months ago, I was pretty financially stable, that to me, I'd rather perform for people that already know what I do and are excited about it, as opposed to muting myself and my passion and my thoughts to fit your mold. So I'd rather do clubs and theaters for my fans than do a corporate gig that might be a nice payday, but then you're getting this kind of sheepish, mutish version of myself that is just not who I am. So I, rather than sell myself, just go watch my special, and it's free.
It's on YouTube. Okay. Go see it.
You okay. Lose nothing. And if you don't like it, I didn't ruin your life. It was free.
Carmen, what's up?
I mean, it's basically the same. There's nothing we can say without you actually watching us or anyone watching us. I would just say social media at Carmen Comedian. I would say watch all the bits on Twitter and Instagram. I have a YouTube channel with my comedy. I have a new album coming out in 3 weeks called Vertically Obese. It's my second album. My first one is on iTunes.
Every what? Late night show. She's been on every late night show. Everyone.
Those are on YouTube. Thank you. And I speak Spanish. I do stand up. So it is what Liz said, is basically like we have a resume and it's online.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it's easier to see what we do there than to try and explain it. Cause I can also go clean. I can go dark. I can go weird, you know? Cool. So.
Well, we're going to have links to all your websites. We're going to have links that, you know, make it really easy for people to find you. Okay. So that's going to be cool. We're hoping that, you know, the world goes back to normal or somewhat normal very soon, so that you can start doing what you do best, and that, you know, Zoom is probably going to be here forever, but we need to see you live, right? We need to see you live.
And in the meantime, watch our videos.
You got it. You got it. Guys, I love these sessions. This was another session of Coffee in the Clouds with comedians.
Take Thanks, care. Tom.
Thank Bye-bye. You.
Tom, Liz,
Thank Carter, you. Bye.
I'll see you all. Thanks, for Tom. Coming next week.